This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support this free service by September 5th, and you could win a Mini Cooper S convertible. Go to KCRW.com for details.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. Welcome to The Treatment. There probably aren't many shows that have gotten the kind of attention, deservedly so, as the new show on Showtime, I don't want to call it a sitcom, but let's just call it the comedy, the film comedy, Weeds. My guest is Jenji Kohan. She's creator and executive producer. Jenji, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Our line producer calls it a comedrama.
A comedrama. Well, take a minute, if you would, and explain to the audience listening for a comedrama, what the show's about.
The one-liner that we've been using is suburban widowed pot-dealing mom. It's a woman with a very established conventional life in the suburbs who finds herself widowed suddenly and turns to pot-dealing to maintain her American dream lifestyle.
And that woman's played by?
Mary Louise Parker.
What I've got to say about the show, having seen the first three episodes, is that there's a sort of a great quality about her where she's all these contradictions and she's kind of angry about the ways that her contradictions play a part of her life.
Oh, yeah.
But everybody else is amused by these contradictions. She wants to sort of be some ideal of what she thinks she is, but at the same time, it's like her girlishness is just basically still tugging at her ponytail.
Right. Well, I think also the anger is part of her cycle of grief. I think she's angry that she's in this situation and has to do this. But at the same time, she's finding she's good at it and she's sort of enjoying it. It's a double life and it's very much out of the realm of what she was doing. And I think it's exciting for her.
It's a show, though, about everybody's anger in one way or another, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. I don't know if anger would be the word I'd use. It's almost like there's this sort of public veneer we all try to maintain. And there are sort of very high standards right now for what it's supposed to look like, mother or suburbanite or whatever it is. And I think there's this pervasive feeling that none of us are living up to it. And so where do you channel that frustration or where do you hide that shame? And what do you do with your little secret that you're not as perfect as you're pretending to be?
Well, for me, too, the show seems to also be about the way Americans buy into archetypes and the way they sort of deal with them. There are certain people who are a lot more relaxed with it and aware of that. That's sort of what is expected of them as compared to the way they're going to lead their lives. And for her, she hasn't quite reconciled her expectations of herself versus everybody else's expectations.
Right, which was sort of the goal of the show. I mean, I came out of network. A lot of our writers came out of network. And we were really intent on exploring deeply flawed characters who functioned in the gray areas. They weren't archetypes. They weren't black and white images of characters. They were complex people who were as close to reality as fictional characters could be. We really didn't want anybody who could be easily defined. We wanted to really explore the faults in these people, which you don't get as much of an opportunity to do on network television.
By the way, we're talking about a show that's on Showtime. It's
yes.
Weeds. It's executive producer Jenji Kohan is with us. I guess I wonder, you mentioned networks.
Yeah.
And the thing that you probably don't get the sort of the notes about or the comments from Showtime is that, no, just show us this one side because that's what we think audiences are going to respond to.
Right. No, we were very fortunate. I think the best thing a network can do is leave you alone. And for the most part, they did. There were, there's bumps in the road and everyone gets nervous. It's a new show and a lot of money and a lot of hopes pinned to it.
And also the subject matter, too, though.
Yeah. And there were some strange weeks where we'd get these weird phone calls, it's not about drugs, it's about a mother. And we'd calmly say, no, it's kind of about drugs and a mother. and then we'd sort of continue on our journey. We really had an arc for the season in the writer's room, and we really stuck to it. And the pilot is very, very different from where we end up. It's really a journey. And the final episode is almost like the pilot for the next season, which in no way is a replication of the first 10, there is a next season.
I'm sure there will be. Talk to me about doing a show that's unapologetically about somebody who sells weed and that the drug culture is very much – it's a show that's kind of an admission because generally, of course, in network TV,
right.
One person smokes weed. They're banished from that show. It's usually the guest star.
Happens.
It's the wild guest star. It's the Johnny boy of that episode of Friends. Oh, he's a bad influence. And everybody else says, we don't do anything like that. Or maybe in college.
Or there's a big discussion and someone learns a lesson.
It's a very special episode.
Yes, indeed.
But this is a show where it's first and foremost
right.
a part of everybody's life and nobody pretends it isn't.
No, but nor do we pass judgment. I mean, we really made an effort to kind of keep it neutral. We're not advocating marijuana use and saying everyone should get stoned and life would be better, nor are we vilifying it and saying that if you smoke pot, your life is over and, you know, you have to have a very special episode. It was really a vehicle for exploring these characters and exploring this world and threat because it's illegal. And there's been a lot of discussion about morality around the show, not as much as I'd like, but there's been discussion.
Why not as much as you like?
Because I'd love to get into it. I think it would be fun to just, you know, I lead a very conventional life. This is my sport, you know, it's entertainment, and I'd love to get in the fray and argue about stuff. But what I like to think is that the morality in the show is subjective, but the thing that's objective is that she's breaking the law, and that's a big choice that she's made, and that's a threat to her family. So,
Do you deal more with that and where that choice came from? Is it the episodes go on past episode 3?
We don't deal with it head on. We don't pass judgment on the pot.
Okay, because that's a way of not judging it. It's just because what they would do in a TV show, too, is basically
the demon weed.
Yes,
yeah.
but also the horrible death or whatever that forced her to do this. And by not doing that, we're just saying this is just something that – this is one of the things she does to sort of keep her,
right.
her – basically her life in economic balance, then that's sort of not judging it, this too, isn't it?
The other thing is what's so great about pot
okay.
as a vehicle
okay.
for
I'm
the
glad
show.
You cleared that up for us.
Yes,
thank you.
Not you know, actually it's ironic because I become sort of like this expert in marijuana. It's not my drug. I'm too much of a control freak. I don't really enjoy it. But it's great for the show. So.
I'm nodding my head. Yes, ma'am, whatever
yes.
you say.
But what's especially great is it seems to cross every social, ethnic, financial, political line. You know, there are people who smoke pot everywhere. It's really universal, it seems. And despite its Schedule I status, it's sort of viewed as the funny drug. Or, you know, no one takes it as seriously as coke or heroin or crack. And it has proven medicinal purposes, and so it's a subject of debate right now, you know, with the cannabis clubs and legalization and in certain states. So it was a good drug to choose for this, and it has served us well. So thank you, marijuana.
Thank God for you, marijuana. The show we're talking about is Weeds, which nobody here smokes, by the way. It's on Showtime. Creator and executive producer Jenji Cohen is with us. It's The Treatment. How did you come up with the idea for this show, though? Because all these questions that you're talking about, that a show about a drug dealer
right.
begs, how did the idea come to you?
Well, I was really into The Shield when I was when I was supposed to be writing this. So I was watching The Shield a lot. And I was also coming out of a network show, The Stones, which had been a rough go. I was watching The Shield and I really loved how, again, flawed and sort of occupying the gray areas the characters were. And I went to the shrink and we talked about something, I don't know if it's a psychological term, but called post-conventional morality, which is if you're not operating within the confines of the morality of society at large, you have to sort of develop your own moral code. And how do you define that? So like the characters on The Sopranos or the characters on The Shield, they sort of – we still love them and they can still redeem themselves because they are following their own moral code, even if they're not following, you know, the larger moral code. And I really loved that theme and I thought it really worked well as sort of an armature for a show. So I was looking for my big moral code to thwart so I could create a separate one for Nancy. And Pa was just in the news. It was in the zeitgeist. There was an article in Los Angeles Magazine that Dave Gardetta wrote about, like, the drug dealer next door. And there had been an article in Esquire I'd read, like, a few years earlier about scoring in the suburbs. And so there was that. And then someone gave me Eric Schlosser's Reefer Madness, and I was reading that, which was fantastic. And 215 passed. It was just sort of in the atmosphere.
You should say for the audience, what 215 is. Explain it.
Oh, it's the Medical Marijuana Initiative in California.
Which we had a huge fight about, by the way.
Yes.
And still an incredibly sort of sticky,
if I can use that
adjective.
Oh, this show lends itself to so many puns. It's just you can't say a sentence without getting in trouble. You know, we're going to stir the pot, and it's a sticky situation, and we want it to be a buzz show.
Let's fire it up, shall we?
Going. Exactly.
Let me talk to me a little bit about the casting, because with Mary Louise Parker, who one of the things I've always really liked about her, she's got this kind of weird, lewd smile that comes out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of suggests an appetite for pleasure that part of her is wrestling with. But in the show, she kind of plays a really kind of elegant straight person. I mean, because
– yes.
Which is interesting given that she has to be the motor for the show.
Yeah, but very often the motor for a show is the straight man. You know, and you sort of sprinkle the comedy around them. And I think it works. You know, she's a wonderful dramatic actress. I think she can do comedy. I don't think it's something she's comfortable with.
But that discomfort seems
it absolutely works. That's why we push it. But it's fun. And once this project got rolling, everyone sort of came to it. It was really almost too easy. There's this whole rigmarole with casting initially where most agents say, if you make an offer to my actress, I'll let her read the script. And it's really obnoxious. And you want feedback. You want someone who wants to do it. And you don't want to take a flyer not knowing anything. And in a real reversal, her manager called and said she read the script, she likes it, and she wants to do it. He called us. And it was really remarkable. It's like, yeah, okay, let's go. You know, it just sort of fell in our lap. And we feel really fortunate because on the screen she's golden.
But that sort of discomfort with almost in a way kind of a physical rejection of a conventional laugh line really kind of works for her. In this,
oh, definitely.
Doesn't it?
Definitely.
Do you find you're actually sort of sculpting the show to that end now?
No. You know, we sort of have our notion of the show, and she has her notion of the show, and sometimes it explodes and it's fantastic, and other times it's on the cutting room floor because we didn't meet in the middle. And, you know, it's an adventure.
Why weeds and not weed?
Because there's a lot of meaning for weeds. You know, there are these hardy little plants that come up through the sidewalk and it's hard to kill them. And there's – someone told me this after I named the show, but there's something called widow's weeds, where garments that a widow would wear, which was really a lucky sort of thing. And, you know, it wasn't just about the pot. It was about all the, you know – the unwelcome little plants that are growing all around, and the heroism of some of those plants.
My guest is Jenji Cohen. We're talking about her new show, Weeds, on Showtime. She's its creator and executive producer. We'll take a break. It's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is Jenji Cohen. Her new show on Showtime is Weeds. It's creator and executive producer. It seems to me in doing conventional, and by conventional I mean network television, so much energy is spent dancing around something
that
energy takes on a life of its own. And it's going to be a real relief to you just to be able to come out and say something, doesn't it?
Yes and no. The thing, we're sort of doing something new, or at least I'd like to think we are. And there's something very comforting about relying on an established craft and an established form. When you're doing network television, you know what's expected of you. And
but doesn't that mean after a while you can kind of do it in your sleep? And you
yes
really...
and no. It still takes a lot of work.
Okay.
And also you want to be the best you can within the form. This is certainly more exciting because it's sort of a chance to, break new ground or, embark on new territory.
Because hearing you, though, I mean, it just sort of felt to me like some part of you, just hearing you talk about the Shield, for example, and these things, and that some part of you really was dying to do this.
Definitely.
I mean, as much as there's a comfort zone.
Yes, it was totally freeing. I'd had a taste of it before working for Tracy Ullman for HBO. And, once you get a taste of that freedom, it's great. And once we were rolling, we wanted to tip every sacred cow and then milk it. we were ready, to take on anything and be bold and be controversial and say all the things on screen that we were saying in the room that were cracking each other up.
Doesn't that get to be a big part of being in a writer's room on TV? You're making all these jokes amongst yourselves that you
yes.
can possibly say in the show.
That's what there were. There was some talk about the Friends lawsuit and how what they were saying in the room appropriate and could it have been used on screen. And our joke in the room is like everything could go on screen, so it was no holds barred. It was a very dirty room, but but hey, it's all for the good of the show.
The show, by the way, we're talking about is Weeds. I think because for me, hearing about that. And seeing the first few episodes, what I sort of sense is this real feeling of kind of relief.
Yeah. Yeah. And joy. I mean, this was such a great experience I have. And I feel sort of dopey and Pollyanna saying it, but I had an incredible writing staff. I had an incredible production team. We had fantastic performers. And it was so much fun. We had such a good time in our little bubble. I think all of us are having a little postpartum now. The production is done. It's like we want to go back, and we've been ruined for all other shows. We don't want to do it anymore. This was too much fun.
Because I'm just kind of wondering, because of your brother's success in network television, that if that made you think that you want to try something. And tell your audience who your brother is and what his success is, by the way.
Oh, my brother is a huge success. He created Will and Grace with his partner. He's a giant in the sitcom world.
But I just wonder if you felt like you wanted to maybe try to find your own area outside of network, too, because of that.
It wasn't in direct response to David. We have very different sensibilities. And always have.
Mm-hmm.
And while we really respect what the other one does, we don't always understand it. I still find him just the funniest person I know. He's brilliant. But he's often shocked by a lot of what I do. His first response to the show was that it was depraved. But he was very proud and very excited. But for him, in a lot of ways, no matter what I do, I'm still his little sister. And it's still upsetting when I write something dirty or I use foul language. And he's very much part of the traditional sitcom world. And, it's where he's had his success and what he's very good at. And while I've done sitcom for a long time and I think I'm a very competent sitcom writer, it wasn't enough for me. It wasn't really where I wanted to be.
When did you learn that?
After contrasting this experience with my past ones, I really learned it. It was good to know I had this skill, and it was good to know I could get a job and be good at it in sitcom. But having done this, it's just I'm better at this and I like it more.
Because there's a sense, too, in this show that having it be a film show, not a show with an audience, you can give it a completely different kind of pacing where you're not saying you're trying to beat laughs into the people.
Right.
You're actually letting the show sort of take its own – build its own tempo.
And – there's not the pressure for three jokes a page or a button on every scene. It takes a lot longer. The efficiency of sitcom, I guess, because you're home by a certain hour. But
it seems like it's that thing you're talking about, too, of doing something new and the right. course of that, it's actually still inventing itself, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but the big revelation for me is like the final rewrite you get in a film show, which I was not aware of coming out of sitcom, that post-production is its own world. And it was the first time really learning about post and all the things you can do in editing and how much you can change stuff. And that was like another chance to get it closer to where you wanted it to be. And that was very exciting.
Because in a three-camera classic audience sitcom, the
you
show
got
is
what you, got.
You got not only that, but the show is ruled by the jokes, which is why those shows deal so often in archetypes and not characters.
Right.
Because people want to hear people laughing, which means there's got to be a joke that's clearly visible and identifiable.
Although what's great about them, like wine, you know, when they age, you can rely on character, like. A show like Raymond or Will and Grace or whatever, after a certain amount of time, you're not working as hard for the joke because people know these characters and they can just make a funny face or say a straight line and it will be funny to the audience because they're familiar. But I think that goes back to archetypes and
yeah, I mean, those aren't actually characters. I mean, just people repeating things. You know, I don't want to use the word cartoon because I like sitcoms too much, but there's a certain kind of predictability in that. And I said relief when I saw the first three episodes because this was a sense of being able to take a breath in this. And the show sort of – and that I guess metaphorically does sort of – God, I feel like I'm making wee jokes here. But it does sort of like sort of take the air it needs to take to sort of inhale and exhale.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's – you can make room in this form. And it's a real luxury. And it looks pretty.
Because it doesn't have to be as physically bright as most sitcoms are, where you have to be able to see everything on the set. That's always they're always so sort of garish.
Right. We sort of had color wars, but what we wanted to make was a short film every week, and they're little movies. They continue on, but the look of them, I mean, what our technical people did with high def was just great. You know, they look like little movies.
That's got to be pretty cool. We're talking to Jenji Kohan. Her show is Weed. She's the creator and executive producer. Why don't you talk, too, about the Black family? That's kind of a big part of what's going on in the show. Because we're talking about archetype and stereotype
right,
here.
Right.
And I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Well,
her suppliers are.
Yes. Her suppliers are a Black family who live sort of West Adams. And there was a lot of discussion about them initially. You know, are they stereotypes, blah, blah, blah. My first job in television was working on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it was an interesting experience. And one of the things that came out of it was I learned to play the bones. I learned to play dominoes really well because I spent a lot of time playing dominoes. And after the show was over, I really wanted to keep playing because I'd had the skill. It was my little white man can't jump sort of thing. So I was looking for a game where I could play with people and they'd sort of let me play, which was hard to find. And finally, I went down to Venice Beach by the basketball courts. And
well, it's ruthless playing down there.
Yeah. It was rough. And you're supposed to keep score for the players who are currently playing. And if you keep score for a game, then they'll let you sit down and play. But they kept skipping over me. And I just had to keep score for them for days. But I kept coming back. And finally, they let me sit down and they realized I could play. And I'd go back every day. And I did this for like 2 years until they shut down the game because they broke so many tables and the rec department stopped replacing them. But I knew these people. I spent a lot of time,
And we should say for the audience who've never been to Venice Beach, these are Black people down there playing.
Yeah.
There are Black people playing basketball, but Black people playing dominoes around
right,
that.
Right. And some played the game and some didn't, and some sold drugs and some were in gangs and some just wanted to play, and it was a whole different scene. And I just kept going back and going back, and I loved these guys. I was pretty much the only woman. I wasn't the only white person, but pretty close to it. And it was during the OJ trial. There was a lot of discussion. And I loved these guys. And they took care of me in a lot of ways. And these were people I knew. And I sort of transferred some of those personality types to Helia and her family.
That's the Black family.
Yeah, the Black family in the show. And my feeling is, these are people I knew. And this is how they spoke with me. And this is my experience with them. And I'm sort of paying homage and recording what I experienced. And if some people want to interpret it as a stereotype, you know, that was my experience. So,
you do know it is a black family supplying drugs, and that's certainly kind of a conventional TV trope almost at this point, isn't it?
But, you know, as much as we'd like to think we're living in equal opportunity America, we're not. And there are certain businesses that you go into because it's you don't have as many opportunities. And I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to say.
Would you have been able to do that on network television, do you think? I mean, let's just say that you were able somehow to get this show through given the subject matter.
Right.
Would you have been able to have, do you think, a black family doing that?
You know, it's hard. It's, I mean, even on Showtime, there was a question of, you know, is she mammy and are we playing this too hard or whatever? And my response to this was, these are based on real people who I knew, and I don't think they were stereotypes. I think they were people. And when people say, why does the black family have to be the drug dealers? Well, the white heroine is a drug dealer. And, you know, the people in her community are dealing or using. And it's no one's innocent here. It's not that they're doing anything less legal or less illegal than our white, you know, Range Rover driving heroine. So I think it's also the way you view it. And they are also sort of the image of the functional family, of warmth, of some sort of genuine sentiment, because they're not trying as hard to put on a show or, you know, they don't need to impress anybody.
Which is that thing, again, getting back to sort of archetype and expectations and what the suburbs kind of demand of you as compared to some place where if you live around West Adams, you know exactly who you are.
Right.
You know exactly what you are.
And I think for Nancy to go down there and have this sort of authentic family experience is very tempting for her. I mean, I know I would spend hours down in Venice. I didn't want to come home because it was my little family and I was like a spy undercover kind of and I got to be part of it for a little while and it was very exciting. Even though I knew I could never really be part of it, it was very exciting and warm.
Well, that's funny you mention that because finally what the episodes I saw are about, and I don't know how the show sort of goes from there, are about kind of a yearning for something that everybody wants something they don't quite have.
You know, we chose to set it in suburbia and what modern times is defining as suburbia for a reason because there are these communities that seem to be popping up, these kind of just add water megalopoli with no central core and no history and no culture. And everyone's just sort of plunked down in the middle and they don't – there's nothing to hold on to. So they try to make their lives as interesting as possible. But it's very, very alienating. And there are more and more of these communities. And I think we're going to see more and more alienation as more Americans are living like this.
Well, certainly a good source of comedy, isn't it?
Oh, hilarious. Well, you know, it's funny because it's true.
We'll leave it there. Thank you, Jenji, for doing the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
My guest is Jenji Kohan. She's the creator and executive producer of Weeds on Showtime. It's a great show. Our technical director is Mario Diaz. The editor is Bob Carlson. Mary Holdridge produces the program. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I swear I'm not high. It's just the water. It's the treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about the treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.